finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Killer Bees!
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Sam Houston Race Park.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. It's a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brian engineering the boys at Sam Houston Race Park live racing on Friday. Although I wonder if that's going to happen today with all the rain. I'm curious about that. But always a great spot to go bet the horses, especially this week. Kentucky Derby tomorrow. Good spot to hang out tomorrow. Sam Houston Race Park. If you're looking for something to do for the Derby, that is the place to go. Austin Rodriguez. Back at Gal producing today's show. Astros win a series. Blankers is all you have to do. You know, it's still semi-early in the year. Yes, you put yourself in a hole, and the Astros putting themselves in a hole where only one other team in baseball history has been able to make the playoffs from the hole that they were put in. That was the Boston Braves in 1914, the Miracle Braves, they called them.
That team was talented.
Yeah, you were the ball boy for them, right?
No, not a ball boy. I actually was like the team manager. But, yeah, definitely it was easier to do because they didn't have many bats in the bat bag, but great team.
Yeah. their ride to the postseason was great. Now more playoff teams now than there were then, obviously. But this is how you get back into the race. Like, there's still a lot of season in front of you. You're going to get healthier. There's reason for optimism, I think, because, you know, you're getting the starting rotation that you want. The bats are starting to come around a little. There's still some key names that we'll talk about that aren't doing what you expect them to do. But from a team perspective, just win series. And the Astros have won 2 series now. They swept Colorado in the 2-game miniseries in Mexico City. The Guardians, when they came in, the best team in the American League. You take 2 of 3 from them. This is how you slowly turn the season around.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's not the desperate times and desperate measures that Brian thought about in the Washington series needing a sweep. But it's what baseball's all about at this point in the year. If you win series, inevitably, you're going to get back into the playoff race. You're going to be a competitive team. You're going to have a chance to do what inevitably at the end of the year you have your sights on doing and the goals for your team. And this is a good sign to win 2 series in a row, to start to kind of turn the tide a little bit, to see some of the production. And like you said, you're getting pitching back, and that's so important because one of the big bugaboos of this team has been the lack of quality starting pitching due to injury. And now that they're getting better starts from their starters, they have a chance to be in competitive games like the last 2 games when they were trailing later in ball games, but it was a 1-1 game. They found a way to get back into it. 1-1, lost one, but nonetheless were in them. Whereas when you get down 3 to 5 runs in the first inning and the table set that way, that's a tough uphill climb for any team to overcome, and they were doing that quite frequently.
Yeah. What were your main takeaways from yesterday's victory for the Astros to take the series in the rubber game against the Guards?
It's always nice to see John Singleton have some pop in his bat, and maybe there is something to it. I don't know that with more consistency, getting more starts, that maybe he will be more of the 4A player we saw at Sugarland. But nice to see a couple of bombs out of the first base spot. That's always a big benefit. Yiner's hitting the ball. Altuve's hitting the ball. You're getting production. So from the positive standpoint, and Spencer Arrighetti, we said 5 innings, 3 runs. He gives you more than 5 innings, only gives up 2 runs. You'll take that, especially from a guy that's still kind of getting settled in on the major league level. I think that was all you could have asked for from him, and you got some production in the offense.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you wanted to start with the pitching and the hitting. Where do you want to begin?
We can start with pitching.
I thought Arrigetti, that's the best that Arrigetti's looked. Like, Arrigetti looked like somebody that is capable of being a major league starter now. And we know that, you know, his long-term prospects is that he'll be in the rotation, maybe middle, back into the rotation. No doubt about that. But the question more is, like, is he ready? Can he do it now? Does he need a little bit more seasoning, et cetera, et cetera? Yesterday, look, the guards' offense is solid. Like, the guards' offense is one of the better in the American League 30-something games into the season. And for Arrigetti to go out there, two runs, four hits, little trouble to command, not crazy, struck out six. Like, yesterday was the first time where Arrigetti had a game, because he had glimpses in his previous starts, like, oh, this guy's got a shot. Yesterday was his first total body of work in a start where it's like, okay, yeah, this guy can be part of a Major League Baseball rotation. Right,
yeah,
now.
Especially, you're right, because especially with what we've talked about with Hunter Brown, we're watching these guys closely to see how the back end of that rotation is going to look when they do get healthier. And this was a good start for him to kind of point it in the right direction and then see if he can keep it going, because he didn't blow up. I agree with you. The control was an issue for me, but the sweeper was keeping guys off balance. His fastball still plays at the big league level, and I thought that he managed situations fairly well. I was pleased with what he gave you, and I think that that's something that the Astros would take based on what they've had to deal with from some of their other starters.
Yeah, and then the bullpen, they just did their job. You know, Taylor Scott came in, inherited a runner, got out of the inning, didn't allow a run, a scoreless frame in the seventh, actually picked up the victory. And then when the offense broke it open, Seth Martinez, this is what Seth Martinez is supposed to do. You have a lead, you finish the game, that way you don't have to use any of your, like, key back-in bullpen guys. You didn't have to use Abreu, who was warming up, actually. Presley probably unavailable. They were asking, they're wondering if Josh Hader was available, said he was stretching, kind of borderline whether or not he should have been available yesterday. And Seth Martinez does what he needs to do, you know, give up maybe more hits than he would have liked. But that's what you want. Whenever you're up by six runs, hey, come close the game. That way we don't have to use our big arms. So the bullpen was good. 3 1/3 yesterday, scoreless baseball. You'll take that, especially when it's not from your big three.
No question, especially after the discussion you and I had yesterday about, you know, just the last couple of spots in the bullpen and how those can still be important spots that you can't just throw away, that you need better contributions and better ability from the guys filling those roles. You got guys that at least got the ball over the plate, got outs, didn't get hurt, saved you from using key relievers that you're going to need in a series where you're playing the first place team in the division in Seattle. And it's a lot better situation to be in going into the series, no matter what else happens, knowing that, hey, my big three in the back of my bullpen are going to be somewhat rested. They're going to be ready to go for these three games that are going to be really important to them making up some ground early in the season if they can continue to win series and play good baseball.
Now, the offensive side of things, we'll save Singleton to the next segment because he's kind of critical to that. A couple of things on the offensive side that I wanted to get to. Jeremy Pena is playing out of his mind. Like, if this is Jeremy Pena, okay, you got one of the top five shortstops in baseball. I don't think that he can sustain a .333 average. I think maybe he could flirt with a .300 average, and that would be borderline top 5-7 shortstop in all of baseball. He was great yesterday all around, 2 for 3, had that triple, got a little bit of help from the guard center fielder, made the Derek Jeter backhand. Remember the days when people were comparing him to Tim Bogar? He's no Tim Bogar. He's way better than Tim Bogar.
Well, that play in the hole was fantastic, and I think a lot of people, you know, prisoners of the moment, love to look at every baseball game with a scope on whoever they can criticize. You and I have both been on the alternate side of a lot of people that were critical of his defense. Period, because he's got an above average arm, he's rangy, he's strong, he's got a good glove. But the play he made last night reminds you of just how good he is defensively. And then the way he's hitting the baseball and the fact that he's not trying to pull everything. He's going the other way when necessary. He's getting multiple hits in games. That's exactly what you need out of your shortstop when you have the other bats in this lineup. And he has been, you know, a very, very pleasant surprise, just because he hasn't just been the old Jeremy Pena. He's been better.
Yeah, that obstruction call at second base didn't hurt him, but I thought that was a stupid call. I'm not going to
like it
this
at all.
Obstruction. Yeah. Like, you had the argument with the Mets 2 days before, might have been the day before, I don't remember, where the catcher, like, did very similar thing that Pena did and was not called for obstruction. And then Pena, where the throw's kind of taking him in, like, to the middle of the bag, gets called for the obstruction. I thought that was, I'm not going to like that rule.
there were two calls that bothered me. The one was Arrigetti and whatever the timing was and wasn't, and trying to figure that out.
Yeah, that one they got right, because you can't come set until the hitter looks at you. And the hitter has until the 8-second mark to look at you. Whenever the second time it was called, there were still 10 seconds on the pitch clock. Like, Arrigetti, like, put up the four. Like, I don't know where he got four from, because there was 10 seconds left.
You could read his lips where he said, "I still had 4 seconds left," and yeah, it was clearly more than that. But I was wondering if that was the call. But the next inning, and I want to say Blummer said it, but normally you get a warning for
that. Yeah, that happened twice in that at bat.
I missed the first warning then, because the next inning the Cleveland pitcher did it and they gave him the warning, and I'm like, well, where was that last inning? I must have missed the first.
Yeah, no, it happened twice. Yeah, it happened twice to Arrigetti.
On the Pena obstruction one. As the rule was explained previously, as long as there is a clear lane to get to the base, I thought he was fine. And the back of the base, from the middle to the back of the base, seemed to be clearly there for the runner, and he got his hand right there.
Well, it's a point of emphasis this year. It's a point of emphasis this year where the fielder is not supposed to be in front of the bag at all.
Now, I thought he was part of it as long as there was still no obstruction for the runner to get to the base, and that's what I was basing
on. It's in front of the bag at all this year. That was the point of emphasis was called all the time in spring training. I don't like the rule, but okay, that's the way the game's going to be governed. Got to deal with it. My contention on that play was that's where the throw took him. Like, what is he supposed to do? Not go catch the ball and let it go into center field? So that's the one that I didn't like, and I thought that it was very opposite of the way that it was governed in the Mets game, like a day or two ago, where the Mets coach lost his mind and got ejected from the game. Didn't hurt them, which is good, because like, we'd be more upset about it. Couple of interesting things, more of the negative side. Yiner with runners in scoring position, he did have that hit late. A little bit of a different player. Like, his approach completely changes. Like, he gets so overzealous and chases pitches in the dirt. It's kind of Jose Altuve-like, quite frankly.
No, it is. I was just going to say, Yiner and Altuve, as good as their average looks on paper, runners in scoring position seems to be a different story. You would expect that, especially in the case of Altuve, that's not going to happen all season long. But from the case of Yiner, yeah, you do have a little bit of concern. You do look at it, and you know, in a different way than you're looking at it with Bregman, but you look at it and go, with as good as he's hitting, that's kind of crazy that, you know, whether he tenses up or whatever the case, that he doesn't look like the same hitter. And you need him up in the top part of the lineup with the ducks on the pond that he's going to face all season long. But thankfully that he got the hit late. Maybe that'll give him some confidence. Maybe that'll change some things. But overall, I mean, I'm very pleased with what you've seen on the regular basis that Yiner's playing. So he's been one of your better hitters. You just hope that he changes it with the runners in scoring position.
Texter saying that I'm reiterating after yesterday, Bregman's swing is robotic, blah, 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 blah. Looks like a T-ball swing. He's been awful. Yesterday he continued his awfulness. Bregman in that game yesterday, he was up twice with runner at third, less than two outs. In the third inning, bases loaded, one out, pop up to first base to Naylor. Fifth inning, first and third, one out, pop up to first base to Naylor. This guy is killing the Houston Astros right now.
Yeah, I was convinced, you know, after our conversation earlier and then seeing what I saw last night, there's no doubt in my mind you need to move him down. And you mean I want to move him down before the first pitch tonight. I want him down in the lineup. I don't care. I'm starting to get the Jeremy Branham. I don't care about feelings at this point with him. I just know he's been absolutely awful. And the fact that he's swinging early in counts, he's popping everything up, and he's doing it at the most inopportune times. This is a big series for them, as early as it is in the season, and he's not hitting the baseball at all, let alone hitting it when you need him, and it's time to move him down. It's time to get him back out of the two-hole. Maybe that lets him kind of calm down a little bit too and rest a little. He's pressing. He's putting the weight of the world on his shoulders. He looks terrible at the plate, and I don't need him in the two-hole anymore.
The lineup is out, Blankers, and you got your wish. Alex Bregman has been moved down in the lineup. Do you want to guess
where?
Without looking where he's been moved down in the lineup?
I haven't looked.
That's why I said, yeah, guess it.
Fifth.
No.
Lower?
No comment.
Okay. Seventh.
Nope.
Oh, boy. Fourth.
Yes.
God.
So, a guy struggling in the two spot. He's been awful with runners at third and less than two outs. RBI situations, he's been atrocious. He's been atrocious, period. Here's an idea. Let's bat him in the cleanup spot. What world is he thinking? Like, Kyle Tucker's been rolling in the cleanup spot. Kyle Tucker's been producing in the cleanup spot. And, okay, like, you want to bat Tucker second, like, I'd probably keep him fourth. Like, you've been kind of winning here. You've won two series in a row. Yep. I would probably just keep Bregman in the two hole, quite frankly, then move him to the cleanup spot. But, okay, like, Tucker in the two spot, I'll concede that. I don't care too much about that. Whatever on that. The fact that Alex Bregman is batting in the cleanup spot is outrageous to me.
It's a joke. We just got done talking about whether it's with running, regardless of runners in scoring position or not. Yiner's putting bat to baseball. Yiner's not popping everything up. Yiner's hitting for a good average. Move Yiner up. Tuck, like you said, has been really, really hot lately. So keep riding that wave. You've got four or five hitters at the top of the lineup that you can ride with that can set the table and have the best odds of getting and best chances of getting guys in. Alex Bregman doesn't deserve to be anywhere in the top four in this lineup. And the fact that you know, again, I feel like you're just kind of concessioning. Well, he can't hit in the two hole, but we're not going to move him too far down. We'll move him to cleanup. That's absolute stupidity in my mind.
See, in my opinion, the three most important spots in the lineup are first, second, fourth, whatever order. Like, you can argue all of them. First, second, fourth, in my opinion, are all the top three most important spots in the lineup. And you can make your case for whatever one. The fact that you demote Bregman from second to fourth is doing nothing. You're saying instead of batting in this elite spot in the lineup, you're going to bat in this elite spot in the lineup, and then this elite spot in the lineup, which is the fourth spot, is more critical to hit with runners in scoring position with two outs. What are we doing here? That's not who Alex Bregman is. And I haven't been banging the table to move Alex Bregman down. Like, if you're winning baseball games and you're trying to get Bregman the protection of Yordan, like, I understand the logic there. But now you're like, okay, well, he's killing us in the two spot. We got to move him. Okay, you've made that decision. If once you make that decision, you got to really demote him. You can't just move him into the cleanup spot. That's absolute silliness for me, from Joe Espada. That's ridiculous.
I know it's earlier in the season, but you can't pamper him at this point in because of the hole they dug for themselves. You just got to have a realistic conversation with him and go, look, you suck right now. You're not hitting the ball. You're not hitting close to what you've done in the past or anything to help the team. And you can candy coat the conversation, but you can just tell him, hey, for what we're trying to do right now and the series we got coming up and for the foreseeable future, we're going to move you down. We're going to move you down in the last four spots in the lineup. And We'll revisit this as necessary. We hope it gives you the chance to kind of relax, just get back to your old swing, and not press as much. But it's got to be done. And the more we had the conversation the other day and then watching it last night, the more adamant I became. This series, he's got to go down, but not to clean up. He's got to go lower than that.
Yeah, that's that's quite the move from Espada. You admit that you don't like him in the two spot, and you just move him back to the cleanup spot. Man, I do not, and I'm not big on lineups. I think that they're highly overrated. I will have the conversation. I think they're highly overrated. But demoting him from second to fourth is quite frankly silly. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Maybe this guy should be hitting fourth. There's a second benefactor for Jose Abreu being sit down to West Palm Beach. I think we can all guess who it is. 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. What are the Astros going to do in the rotation with Arrigetti, Brown? Do they have to do anything? We'll get into Patrick Beverley, the childlike behavior from Patrick Beverley, who said it at 4:30, and one of the biggest homer takes I've ever seen. 713-780-3776. The Killer Bees broadcasting live from Sam Houston Race Park. Go see the boys. They'll be there till 6. Live racing on Fridays. You can always bet off the monitors. Kentucky Derby tomorrow. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN975, ESPN925.
Guys, we know how Houston heat and humidity can be overwhelming. We know it's even worse when your air conditioning and HVAC system goes on the fritz. The fact is it also can affect your entire house. It's your biggest investment. And when you need to make sure that your house is protected, you can become energy efficient, you don't put as much wear and tear on your air conditioning units, you do everything you need to do for your house, it starts with going to Allstate Siding and Windows. Allstate Siding and Windows, best in the business, and they're in Houston proper. They are Houstonians, they love Houston sports, and they love ESPN 97.5, and more so than that, they love coming to your house to tell you what they can do to help you protect your biggest investment, that being your house. The windows, phenomenal. The siding, fantastic. You don't have to do all the day-to-day maintenance. The siding upgrades the look and feel of your curb appeal of your house, but more so than anything else, it creates that hard outer shell that you need, whether it's hurricane season or the cold or the heat. It's all taken care of with Allstate Siding and Windows. And the windows, I speak from personal experience because I just had the windows put in a few months ago. What an unbelievable difference it makes in our house. The curb appeal and the more modern look and feel of the house when you see the windows and what they do to complement the house, fantastic. On top of that, the energy bills are going down, and the look and the feel are fantastic, and the comfort level of knowing the house is protected no matter what we're dealing with temperature-wise or with hurricane season. Right now, 30% off all windows, $2,500 off complete siding jobs. All you've got to do to get that free estimate is call them. 832-204-1936. That's 832-204-1936. Check them out online at allstatewindowsandsiding.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Sam Houston Race Park.
We'll talk to Astro TV broadcaster Todd Callis, the voice of the Astros on the Shin, at 5 o'clock. Bregman gets demoted from the two-hole to the four-hole. We'll get to the second benefactor of Abreu being sent down in a moment. What is the equivalent, though? To Bregman getting demoted but batting fourth. What is the equivalent like in real life? Like, to me, it's we're going to fire one of our cell staff members and then we're going to rehire him and we're just going to move him to a different cubicle. Like, has the same exact responsibilities. Everything is the same, but you just fired him, you rehired him, and now he's going to be in the cubicle one door to the left. Like,
yeah,
what is the equivalent?
It's like, hey, we're going to move you from vice president to director, but you're still going to make the same salary, and your office is just going to change a few doors. But other than that, no worries.
Isn't this kind of exactly what happened to Jack Easterby at one point? I remember he got removed for maybe having like a team or like a kind of a general manager say, but they gave him like a title promotion and made him like I can't remember the exact title he got, but he kind of failed upwards into a position where he wasn't necessarily running football ops, but he got a promotion and title.
I think he got more money too when that happened. Yeah,
it's like executive vice president. I think is
yeah,
what it
exactly.
Was.
Yes. He got a promotion and title.
What is the equivalent of Bregman getting demoted but then batting cleanup? 5895, that's like grounding your kid from video games but letting them watch TV. That's a pretty good one.
That is a good one.
That's a pretty good one. It's like, I'm not going to drink anymore unless it's Gentle Ben. then it's very good. 9656, GM to President of Football Operations. That's what it was. Not Executive VP. President of Football Operations. 8437 says it's not a demotion. Yeah, I mean, kind of, you're right. It's really not. Like, I think that second and fourth are very similar. In terms of their value to an offense, I think the two-hole and the four-hole are very, very similar. It's why he used Jordan in the second spot. Someone texted in, said, I want Pena up at 2 and Bregman down to 5. That was Corey. Now, I don't hate this idea. The pushback, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with it. I'm just pushing back for the sake of pushing back. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to mess with Pena too much. Like, Pena's been rolling in the sixth spot. Now he's been batting in the fifth spot. Like, he's been very productive. He's been producing a lot. I really don't want to mess with Jeremy Pena right now.
Well, and this is like the old Dusty philosophy where he didn't want to mess up too much, so he just, whoever was sitting, he just put whoever was replacing them, no matter how bad or good of a hitter they were, they went to the same spot. But I really don't want to mess with Pena or Tucker, and I'd rather not take either one of those guys out of where they're currently hitting, because they've been red hot. But at the same time, you know, if the option is Alex Bregman stays in the top five, I'd rather not have that more so than moving one or two of those guys, because he's just been god-awful. And that's got to change with a team that's chasing, not being chased. So I hate the fact that this is their kind of happy medium to getting him out of the two-hole.
Yeah, I don't like the happy medium. I would have rather kept him in the two-hole, because now he's not really getting much protection, even though Pena's been better than Jordan, but Pena's not nearly as feared as Jordan is in the lineup. 713-780-ESPN, 5895, move Diaz to second in the lineup, problem halfway solved. I don't really hate that. Now, Pena, Diaz doesn't have like one of the, Diaz on base is fine, 322. It's sixth on the team. Now that includes Chaz, and Chaz isn't with the team, so it's probably fifth on the team. I actually don't dislike that, because I think Yiner's actually a better table setter than he is a table clearer. He hits better when runners aren't on base than he does with runners on base. So I don't hate that idea. He's just not like your prototypical two-hole hitter.
No, I agree with that. But, you know, based on what we've seen numbers-wise and what we talked about in the first segment and his lack of production with runners in scoring position, maybe you try it. Maybe you just do a flip-flop that way. And, again, hopefully it's a flip-flop when he was hitting six so that you can move Bregman down an extra couple of spots. But even if you don't, at least you have a more capable hitter with a better average hitting in the two-hole.
Yeah. Yeah, and then your Bregman's outside of your top four, top five. You know,
yep.
Like
yep.
Now you're actually moving him down. King of Twitch says that Pena has earned it. Look, a fifth spot in the lineup is very important. Like Jeremy Pena batting in the fifth spot is very, very important, and he's driving in runs there. So I don't mind him in the fifth spot. If a spot of, you know, put a Pena in the two spot, Tucker in the four spot, and move Bregman down, I'd probably like that more. But I really don't want to mess with Pena, so I'm good there.
But Jeremy, wasn't he good? Wasn't it the old school of thought was he really wanted to be in the two hole previously, so that's where he flourished, and then of course until he didn't. But mm-hmm. maybe. From the just taking devil's advocate side of that to say, hey, he's loved and wanted to hit in the two hole before and had some success there. So if you move him there, maybe you don't lose whatever you've gained with him hitting lower in the lineup.
I mean, I think it's a good point. I'm still going to say I don't want to mess with him, and I like him in the middle of the lineup as opposed to let's all of a sudden move him to second, and mm-hmm. you know, now he's trying to set the table, and now maybe you change his mentality a little bit. The counterpoint I would have is that Alex Bregman's best spot in the lineup's been fourth. You know. So, like, how much are we using past history to determine our batting lineups? Because you can say that about Pena, and yes, you would be right, but then you, on the other side, you can say that about Alex Bregman, that any spot that he's been in the lineup with over 100 at-bats, the best spot is fourth in terms of, like, OPS, batting average, all that stuff. He's actually thrived in the cleanup spot in his career. But do you want him batting fourth? And some of this is just form, and are you performing well right now? Risk, thoughts on Breggy to nine, have him walk before Altuve. I'd rather him bat ninth than bat fourth, Risk.
Yeah, look, I think when you think about this, maybe he could do a Pena and do an Abreu and do a solid. Understand, at some point you have to look in the mirror, no matter what your contract situation is and what you're thinking about in terms of the future. The fact of the matter is the here and now is you suck, and you're terrible at the plate. And you're killing your team, and at a certain point, no matter what the big goals, dreams, and aspirations are of after this season, you got to do the right thing here until you can show signs of life that mean that you're going to actually become a guy worthy of hitting in the top five in your lineup.
Someone texting saying Dubon, put him in the everyday lineup and have him bat second. I don't like Dubon batting second. Dubon's high contact, low walk, low slug. I don't mind Dubon being an everyday player. Or almost an everyday player, but I would not bat Dubon in the two spot. He doesn't reach base, quite frankly, enough, and I think that your best players, it doesn't matter who you're determining, top three, top four. One of your top three, top four hitters needs to be batting second. Dubon's not one of your top three, top four hitters. You know, maybe in like batting average, but he never walks. He walks very, very few times, and he doesn't slug much. I have no problem with Dubon playing almost every day. I have problem with Dubon batting in my top two spots in the batting order.
Yeah, I agree, because he is every at-bat is a tale of two different approaches. Until he gets two strikes, he is a free swinger. He's kind of wild, and then he kind of is able to kind of hone it in, dial it down, and not swing as big. And he's been effective to a certain degree. That doesn't mean he should be in the two-hole in a lineup that has this many capable bats that could be someone better in that spot.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, 8437. So for someone that argues the batting lineup doesn't mean much, you sure are doing a lot of arguing about the batting lineup, Branham. Well, it's topic of conversation. What do you want me to do, just go silent, be a mute about it? I do have opinions on the batting lineup. I just think that they're overrated. But if we're trying to optimize things, then let's chat. 8693, love Tucker in the two-hole, though. I don't hate the idea of Tucker in the two spot, but he's been crushing the baseball right now in like a run-producing spot where I wouldn't have moved him. I would have kept Tucker in the four spot. Like, overall, general thought, Kyle Tucker batting second excites me, but like the way it's going right now, you've won four or five games, Tucker's been red hot. I wouldn't have moved Tucker.
Me either, because of the fact that we just got done talking about the lack of production with runners in scoring position all year as a theme, but particularly with guys that are still hitting the baseball well, like Altuve and Yiner, and Yordan's on an 0-for streak. The fact is, the guy, aside from Singleton recently, Tucker's been your guy. When guys are in scoring position, ducks are on the pond, chances to drive in runs, he's been hitting bombs, extra base hits, getting on base, doing the things you need him to do. that's the big argument for not moving him, is the fact that of all the guys that have been less than with runners in scoring position, he's been a guy putting numbers on the board for you.
Yeah, it's that one's curious. Like the flip flop is very curious to me. 8693. Bregman's also 1 vs. 11 versus Kirby. Okay, BVP stats. Like, how much are you factoring that into the movement? I don't know. Like, if he's 1 for 11 against Kirby, I'm not batting him second or fifth or fourth. If we're going to put that much weight in BVP, 5'8". Go ahead. Yeah,
Here's the thing. We're looking at the big picture right now, right? Think about previous to this, just the last year or when this team has been successful. No matter who is pitching against them, the top five guys in that lineup pretty much did not move. They did not fluctuate based on a pitcher. Now suddenly you're going to move Bregman because of a pitcher, when the fact of the matter is you don't need to see who's on the mound to know he sucked.
Yeah, they might move it because of, like, handedness of the pitcher in the past, lefty-righty, but not a ton. And the Astros, you're right. Well, I mean, it's still very early in Espada's career. But Espada in his first 31 games has not really shown that he's going to move the top guys of the batting order based on who the other pitcher is. It's usually based on, like, what he wants the batting order to look like for, like, a week or so. 5-8-9-5, because remember, he hit Jordan second. He had Bregman batting third, Tucker batting fourth for a little while, and then he flipped it for a little while, let that have a run, of course, didn't like that. Then he flipped it for a little while to have Bregman batting second. So usually it's more, okay, I want my lineup to look like this for 5-7 games. 5-8-9-5, I like Dubon 9. He's flexible and is solid, gives you a little bit of pop at the end of the lineup. That's where I like Dubon. I think Dubon is really good 9-hole hitter. I wouldn't have him in my top three just because he didn't get on base enough. 8-7-6-9, Bregman should be 7 through 9, 6th at best. Moving him to 4th is like taking your cousin to prom. Doesn't really count as a demotion. Okay, taking your cousin to prom doesn't count as a demotion? Like, I like the joke.
Depends but then on what being, state you're in.
SEC, it just means more.
That's right.
You guys are agreeing on everything. We actually agree more than people think. It's just we get pretty heated in the little things that we don't agree on.
That's right, true.
713-780-ESPN, which would be boring if we always 100% agreed. That's probably why he's saying that. 713-780-3776. Let's get to the second benefactor of Jose Abreu being sent down, John Singleton. Of course it's John Singleton. It's John Singleton showing you that he is a real live boy. I mean, a real life major leaguer. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN
97.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Sam Houston Race Park.
As he hits one high, he hits one deep, at the track is Brennan, and this ball's gone! He's done it! John Singleton, second home run of the series, gives the Astros the lead here in the bottom half of the sixth inning. It's 3-2. A towering shot that just cleared the wall and right.
Is John Singleton him? John Singleton's giving a run of play here. What do you mean, easy now?
Him is like the big time. No.
He's not him,
No, he could be part of we, but he
him
ain't him.
Singleton? He's not him Singleton.
No.
Have you seen what he's done since Jose Abreu got DFA'd? He has homered twice in 3 games.
That's right. And he's
he
not
is him.
That up. He still is not him.
I don't know.
He's part of us.
The guard
he could
series.
Be a we for the time being until he fades again, but no, he's not him.
Him-ish?
Us-ish.
I'm being
since
a little,
I was willing to get rid of him, he's us and we-ish.
I mean, I was close to there. I wanted to get rid of Abreu, but if Singleton was the casualty for Brandon Belt, it'd have been like, okay, no big deal there. But since Jose Abreu's been DFA'd, Hamilton has been hitting .444 with an OPS of over 1600, 2 home runs. Now, it's just 3 games. Now, here, it's not fair to look at just the 3 games when it comes to John Singleton, but he is acting like a real big leaguer. It gives you good at bats. Like, at least he sees some pitches and he'll draw a walk. He won't swing it. You know, sometimes he will, but that's baseball. But he makes the pitcher work to get him out. We had this conversation 2 weeks ago. If you had to give 500 plate appearances to Jose Abreu or John Singleton, who is it? And for me, it was John Singleton because at least he's going to make the pitcher work. Jose Abreu wasn't making the pitcher work. Now, when you look at Singleton and what he's done for the full season, because you're right, it's not fair to look at 3 games when you're talking about John Singleton. But when you look at just 2024, John Singleton has had 59 plate appearances, which is small sample, yes, but that's a substantial amount. He's had 51 at-bats. He's hitting .275 on the year, .356 on base, .431 slug. You do the math, .787 OPS, and then, of course, a couple of home runs, six RBIs. Most of that has been in the last three games. The homers have all been in the last three games. Is John Singleton a major league first baseman that can play every day on a playoff team?
No. I don't. I still don't think so.
Why not?
Because I think that, again, it's a small sample size for right now. And the prerequisite, the main reason why no is on a playoff team, on a World Series capable team. He could be a major league hitter. He could be a guy off the bench. He actually could be a guy, to his defense, that, you know, because he said, like, when he gets the consistency of knowing he's going to be in the lineup several days in a row, there are some hitters that to get the frequency of getting in games every day and having that kind of repetition as opposed to BP and guys throwing to you on in different scenarios, I understand where you can get a better rhythm. But we've seen who John Singleton has been his entire career. To somehow suddenly think that because you sent Abreu to the minor league facility and he's getting this opportunity, he's suddenly going to be capable of being a first baseman on a playoff team, I can't go that far.
Okay. I don't know if it's fair to use Singleton's, like, I don't think it's fair to use Singleton's entire Major League Baseball career, because I think he's a much different player now than he was 4 years ago. Actually, like 10 years ago, because he was with the Astros in 14 and 15 when he was 22, 23 years old. I kind of dismissed those numbers because I think he was a much different player. And he's only been back in the bigs the last 2 years. And last year he had 105 plate appearances, you know, hit .165, .530 OPS, not very good. And then we mentioned the stats just a moment ago. Do I think Singleton's going to produce the line that he has right now? No. Do I think that John Singleton can play first for a playoff team? Yes-ish. This is going to make a lot of people mad. The Astros won the World Series when they had Yuli Gurriel first base, and he hit poorly. He hit really, really bad. Like Singleton, I would bet that Singleton in 2024 would have better offensive numbers than Yuli Gurriel did in his final year with the Stros. And in his final year with the Stros, the Astros won the World Series. So I do think you can get by with a John Singleton type at first base. Don't think he's a long-term answer. I think that he's capable of holding down first base for the most part this year. Maybe in a platoon setting a bit, although he hits lefties pretty good. Now, Singleton's numbers right now, like if you just took Singleton's numbers this moment, and what you were doing, you were being predictive a little bit, which you should be as a general manager. But if you took his numbers right now, his numbers definitely play. A .275 average and a .787 OPS absolutely plays. Now, you're questioning if that's sustainable, and I think it's a fair question, and nothing in his career at the big league level would suggest that it is. Maybe it's wishful thinking, maybe it's hoping, maybe it's praying. But I do think that John Singleton is capable of holding down the fort for at least a few months, potentially, and maybe the entire season.
Okay. I'll play devil's advocate to that for the texture and for my own sanity, because of the fact that when I look at him, I say, yes, I agree with you from the standpoint of I'll cancel out the early years, the weed years after the 10-year, $10 million deal years.
Did you call him the weed years?
Yeah. that he had issues and got wayward. He honed it back in. But last year he played for two different teams. Milwaukee didn't see enough in him when they brought him up that they didn't keep him. They got rid of him. They didn't think he was worthy of being on the roster, let alone being someone that was going to start or contribute to their team. Houston caught lightning in a bottle for one game where he had two home runs. Other than that, he didn't homer last year when he was with the Astros. But at least this year now, regardless, that's why I'm not willing to go too far down the road. Is he going to be the starting first baseman for the next series or two week or two? Absolutely. If he keeps going like this and he's earning the time, more power to him and keep it going. I just don't think realistically, even just seeing what he's been this second go-round, it's enough for me to believe on a playoff-caliber team that I see him being a starting first baseman. If he hits like even – he's going to regress a little bit, regardless of what else he does, I think. But if he continues to at least make contact and put bat to baseball, he could be a major league player on the roster, on the bench, and platoon, like you said. But I can't see him being a starting first baseman for a playoff team.
If Singleton was .787 OPS the rest of the year, can he be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's the baseline. What is your baseline?
I mean, it's not quite as low as Loperfido when we were saying what we expected to see from him if you expect he's going to hit 250. If John Singleton could hit 265, no, but the pop number, it's high?
Yeah, because he's an on-base guy. Like, he sees a lot of pitches. He's gonna get on base, work walks and stuff like that. Like, he's not going to be a high average guy.
Well, but we've seen him with a good eye from time to time when we did see positives last year at the end of the season.
Which isn't going to help his batting average.
So then
let's go
with the low Profito type numbers. Let's go if he's capable of hitting 250-ish, if he's capable of continuing the power numbers that we haven't seen since the two home runs last year until this week, and he can give you some consistent pop. The play last night, the stretch last night was great. We got to see more of that because Abreu was so putrid and terrible when he was at first base this year. But you got to see, if you're not going to get the average, then you got to get the more boom than we've seen from him. But and stay consistent with putting bat on baseball.
Okay, bat on baseball is your bar.
No, I mean, I just don't want him flailing at pitches. I don't want him look like he's overmatched like Abreu. But I got to see the pop numbers have to go up. I got to see the slugging has to go up because I got to see
two homers in 3 days.
Right, that's two homers in 3 days over the course of the fact that he's been here all season. And last year, all we saw was in one game. I need to see more from him. But like I said, also because they don't have many options at this point. If he's going to be comfortable right now with this series coming up, and then with the fact that they have bigger fish to fry the rest of the month, Yankees and other teams on the schedule, he's your starting first baseman for the foreseeable future. Yes,
787 OPS is where he's at now. Like, there's no doubt in my mind if he's a 787 OPS guy, he's an everyday first baseman for the Astros. You're absolutely right too that the bar is extremely low because the Astros don't really have great alternatives there. And we saw what Jose Abreu was doing. He was on pace to be the worst baseball player of all time, and that's not hyperbolic. Dubon, like, not really a first baseman. Low Profito might be an option there, like every now and then for now, and then maybe takes over if Singleton were to be poor. I agree with you that 787 is not sustainable for Singleton, but my bar for him to, like, just be the Astros' everyday first baseman, like, I think if he's a 750 OPS guy, that's good enough to be an everyday first baseman on this team and for the Astros to win a lot of games. And in terms of what's the plan for John Singleton, for me, it's I want to see him play almost every day for 3 weeks, and let's readdress then. Like, let's talk about it in 3 weeks after Singleton's been playing every day. Because Singleton these last couple of years has been getting spotty at bats. He's been playing sporadically. And, you know better than anybody as a former player that when you're playing sporadically, especially as an offensive player, it's tough to find a rhythm. You're not seeing live pitches every day. It's a repetition sport. So give me 3 weeks of John Singleton playing almost every single day, and let's have a conversation then.
Well, I agree with you, Jeremy, because here's the thing. We talk about position flexibility in football. We talk about it in baseball. The guys we're talking about that could play first base, not named John Singleton, are guys in which, with position flexibility, it's a position that they're capable of playing. But it's not really their ideal position, whether it be Cabbage or Dubon or Loprofito. If you're looking at John Singleton, that's home to him. So he's going to be more comfortable there from a defensive perspective. And because of the mentality, I totally believe he is one of those guys that he needs the consistent reps. So I'm with you. For the next 2-3 weeks, he's your starting first baseman more times than not. Yeah, you can mix in a rest day here and there. But for the most part, I expect to see him start at first base. I'd love to see him keep the consistency that he started with these last couple games when he knew he was going to be that starter. And then you ride it out from there. You adjust accordingly based on if he falls off the planet again or if he continues to have success in Sabop.
713-780-ESPN. Singleton looks like he's in much better shape this year, says 7107. This texter, 4071, I want Singleton on the bus. I wanted Singleton on the bus with the Abreu to West Palm Beach. Glad they didn't. It's working at least for right now. 4518, first base is Singleton's to lose. If yesterday's game any indication of who he is with more at-bats, then he'll make the first base decision hard for the Astros. I mean, if he's playing like he does really this year, if he has a 787 OPS the rest of the year, I think it makes the decision easy. Like, John Singleton's your guy if he sustains this level of play.
Not just home runs, but those home runs were in key situations. I mean, the home run last night was huge. If he's doing those kind of things, then it's hard. It's a no-brainer. You keep him out there.
Peña was acknowledging Singleton as his tribal first baseman whenever he crossed the plate. 9198, Singleton plays a very lazy defensive first base. I don't see that. Like, I really don't.
Jose Abreu this year?
And Singleton made a great diving play yesterday. Yeah,
the diving play, he made the great diving play, and then he made the great scoop on the Peña jump throw. I mean, I think that Singleton kind of gives off the demeanor because he's kind of heavier and he has that resting face that sometimes it comes across is lazy. Like, I don't see that, though. I just don't think he's a great defensive first baseman. Had a couple of great defensive plays yesterday. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. All right, there's a former general manager, Jim Bowden. He took the words right out of my mouth when it comes about the optimism for the Houston Astros. 713-780-3776, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I also have a ton of optimism from Third Rock. Third Rock Renewables, they are the very best. There aren't many things that we know of in our lives that are more annoying than potholes, right? We hit them, takes our car off of out of balance, it doesn't feel good. We hate potholes. I know you've done everything. If you have potholes, maybe on your driveway, maybe you have some land, you have a little driveway, a throwdown lot, whatever the case may be, we've had to experience potholes. And I know that you've done everything to fix these potholes that you have authority over. You know, sometimes in the city roads, we don't have authority over those. And I know that nothing works. Well, finally, there's something you can do to change that. It's mechanical concrete from Third Rock Renewables. It'll fix all these problems for good. Third Rock Renewables, patented technology, mechanical concrete, changing the game and fixing these annoying potholes for good. They're going to fix these ranch roads, these laydown yards, truck parking. You have a business. Whatever the case may be, mechanical concrete is for you. And they're also going to cut your maintenance cost by 75% while lowering your carbon emissions. So you're going to save green while you are green. And if you mention ESPN 97.5, you save 20% off as well on top of the savings already. It's too good to be true, right? It's not. It is true. Fix your parking lot, your road, your laydown yard, wherever you have a pothole or you want to throw down some, you know, asphalt back in the day. Now it's going to be mechanical concrete with Third Rock Renewable. It's the only low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base which turns these end-of-life tires into an indestructible build product. Mechanical concrete is for you for a variety of different reasons. 713-305-0507. That's 713-305-0507. And fix all of these, the laydown yards, the potholes, truck parking. Fix it for good. Visit Third Rock Renewable as well at thirdrockrenewables.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Sam Houston Race Park.
Sam Houston Race Park, your spot for some live racing tonight. Some advanced wagering available on the entire Churchill Downs card tomorrow, too. Tomorrow, the Kentucky Derby. Today, wear pink in honor of the Oaks Lily and in support of breast cancer. Lily Oaks drink specials, live racing with the first post at 6:30 coming up tonight, 30 minutes after the boys are heading out. $5 admission, too, so that's fantastic. Drink specials there as well. And then tomorrow's the Houston Biggest Derby Party. Biggest Kentucky Derby party in the city right there at Sam Houston Race Park. Only $5 general admission. The gates open as soon as 8 a.m. First post at the Churchill Downs is at 10:30 a.m. Live simulcasting going on as well. A derby hat contest, $500 for the best derby hat. And then you can't have the Kentucky Derby without mint juleps, right? They'll have mint julep drink specials tomorrow at Sam Houston Race Park. So get on out there tonight. Get on out there tomorrow for the biggest derby party in the city. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So Jim Bowden, who covers Major League Baseball for The Athletic. He goes on MLB Network Radio all the time. He said something to MLB Network Radio that really took the words out of my mouth. Here's the former baseball general manager.
The only reason they're in the dweller is that they've had so many injuries to starters and they haven't had enough starting pitching depth to be able to withstand it. But look, Verlander looks like Verlander. After three starts, he has a 2.08 ERA. Before Valdez got hurt, he had a 2.6 ERA after three. And Christian Javier looked like the guy he was a couple of years ago. He had a 1.5 ERA after four starts before he got hurt. So all three of their starters have been dominating. Ronel Blanco has been a big story. He's 3-0 with a 1.6. So those are four starters that have been dominating with a combined ERA of 2. I mean, they've been really good. So why are they losing? Well, Hunter Brown is 0-4 with a 9.78 ERA. Spencer Arrighetti, not Spaghetti, but Arrighetti, is 0-3 with an 8.27. And J.P. France is 0-3 with a 7.46. So the unfortunate part for them, those guys have made 15 starts, and of the 15 starts, they've won none of them.
All right. So there was a couple things there from Jim Bowden. Before we get to the actual meat and the actual importance of what he had to say, grade the joke. Not spaghetti, arrighetti. Grade the joke, 713-780-3776.
You couldn't see me.
Joel was slapping
fake
his leg.
Slapping was, the yeah. table and the leg.
Oh, really?
Joel
was
fake
doubled,
laugh. Like,
Joel
okay,
over
Jimmy,
laughter.
Slow down.
I
That's like an 07. 07 for me.
It's a zero.
Zero,
it's,
zero for you?
It's, yes. It's Jose Abreu's batting average.
099. So that was the highest grade of them all. And actually, it wasn't. The other thing is, I've never heard somebody say dweller. Have you heard that?
Cellar dweller.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that
yeah,
before.
I've heard that.
I've heard cellar dweller, but I've never heard dweller by itself. Maybe that's just me. Maybe it's
a little more random. Yeah.
Cool enough. Anyways, this is the optimism I have from the Astros as well. Like, you're getting your starting pitching back soon. And it's really all the way back when Javier comes back. And now you're looking at a top four of the rotation. We'll talk if the Astros go six man, who's the odd man out, blah, 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 blah. But you're going to have your top four in a rotation of either five or six. That is Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, and Ronel Blanco. How does that not excite you? How are you not excited about that? And certainly you don't love where your record is at. But that's a rotation that's going to win a lot of baseball games.
No doubt. When you look at... This is why I've never jumped. Why I've never jumped off the bandwagon, because of the fact that we knew the three things that were ailing this team was starting pitching, and runners in scoring position, and more so than anything else, injuries. And you know that you're getting healthier, and you know that you're gonna with getting healthier, your starting pitching is going to improve because of the guys that are going to take the spots from the guys that have been underachieving. So two of those three are already checked off, and there's too much talent, too many guys that are too good in this lineup. And you got Abreu out of it now to think that it was sustainable for them to be this bad offensively. And they're starting to show even signs of that. So the fact is that when we looked at the roster and you talked about this team, there's a reason why they were one of the top five teams favored to win the World Series or at least get there. It's because they were too damn good to be playing this bad for an entire first month of the season. And now that they're starting to get healthy and they're getting their starters back, that means their bullpen will improve as well. And now they just figure out the runners in scoring position, and you're in a great spot. And because in the division, there's been a lot of underachieving where Texas has been underachieving, and Seattle is treading water enough to be the best team in the division, but at least you're not down double digits in the division to where they're within reach. All you got to do is keep doing what we've been saying about winning series and playing more consistent baseball, and you're right there.
Yeah, just take it one series at a time. Win every series that you play. 713-780-ESPN. Todd Callis, the voice of the Astros on the shin. He'll be joining us at 5 o'clock, 4:30. We have a Who Said It. But when we come back, Astros are going to have a decision to make here pretty soon. Christian Javier makes a rehab start this weekend. He'll be back in the rotation, according to General Manager Dana Brown, next week. What do you do with the rotation when Javier is back? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.